Rewind is an award-winning insider's look at Wisconsin politics and public policy. Brought to you by Wisconsin Eye and wispolitics.com. To become a program sponsor, please send an email to rewind@wiseye.org.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it. We're not even going to be yours.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind for a busy week in the Capitol, but first, Wiseye was there, excuse me. Joint Finance Committee members welcome back Co-Chair Senator Alberta Darling, who had been recovering from a fall. Republican Representative Travis Tranel, on the need to maintain town roads, and a sharp exchange between Senator Carpenter and Mr. Mark Hogan about the a audit critical of the Economic Development Corporation. And this question, can Wi-Fi in public schools threaten students' health? Wiseye was there.
I think it's a good day to have the co-chair back with us. We've definitely felt your absence, and I know that I speak for everyone both sides of the aisle and say we were praying for you and happy to see that God was able to help you heal so quickly that you could come back to us and help lead us over the next few weeks.
You're going to make me cry. I really thank you. I think the prayers especially work.
In my opinion, I don't think you're doing a good enough job explaining what the needs are and what the true cost is that you need to maintain our town roads. And I think it would be in your best interest, and certainly everybody's best interest who lives on a town road, to be more aggressive so legislators have an idea of what the true cost is to maintain our roads. Because if towns aren't a serious part of this conversation now, when everybody is interested in the conversation, I don't see a path in the future where it's going to get better.
When the discussions were going on with Foxconn from the very beginning, and big debate was being discussed about these jobs should be created and kept here in Wisconsin, that wasn't followed. My concern is when you appear in front of the audit committee, I don't know what can be said that lets people know, the taxpayers, that they're sensitive, that their dollars are being spent wisely.
The fact that LAB has come up with this finding, in fairness to them, I think it truly is. They came up with this finding because they have something to compare it again with the Foxconn legislation.
Yeah.
But this has never been an issue before when they've reviewed enterprise zone awards.
My concern about this proposal is that it opens up an opportunity where people are not as confident about the way the ballots are elected and counted, because the voting machine is going to be out in a public space, not monitored by some of the things we have in place to assure security.
As far as the machines themselves, remember, they are not attached to the internet. So as far as being hacked, or they are separate units. They have to go through the WEC system, so they will be obviously under watch the whole time, just like you would have for any other election.
A teacher called in from Pennsylvania, and she said the kids in school, and she's been a teacher for like 25, 30 years, they're dizzy, they have migraines, they have headaches, they're nauseous, they're weak, they have, you know, they're tired. All of these symptoms are from the exposure to the Wi-Fi in the buildings. People are sick. They're only getting sicker. You are charged with protecting the public.
One thing causes one thing. If one thing causes a laundry list of things, what you're learning about is not causation. What you're learning about is statistical fluctuation. Okay. One thing does not cause everything. It doesn't happen like that in medical science. One thing causes one or maybe two things. So whenever you hear a laundry list of things that are a result of one cause, you should be concerned. It's a red flag that something's wrong.
On February 28th, Governor Evers submitted a budget with four central hallmarks, you know, health care, transportation, K-12, and I'm going to add the UW system funding because it's part of his K-12 focus on education as a superintendent of public instruction. Okay, K-12, they're $900 million apart with joint finance Republicans. Expand Medicaid, that's not going anywhere with it. And now, last week, the Republicans cut his budget for the UW system. They're going to put up $58 million more and require Joint Finance Committee approval of $45 million of that. Democrats defended Evers' call for $130 million more. They're continuing the freeze, but they're not appropriating the $50 million to pay for it. And also, Republicans on Joint Finance didn't go along with the governor's request for $10 million more to train up the next generation of nurses, which is something, as we age, we need. Now, you were there for a Ray Cross, UW System President, mm-hmm. when he gave his reaction, kicked in the shins. Talk about that.
So Ray Cross, in the time as president of UW, has spent part of the time trying to cultivate a better relationship with Republicans. There's always been, I mean, the whole time I've been here, even before me when you first got here, Republicans and UW have always had a contentious relationship because there is that separation of Republicans who think that you should focus more on workforce development
right.
and the universities, the Denver, Wisconsin idea, the humanities, things like this. And Ray Cross has been beaten up by Democrats the whole time saying, this is never going to work, Ray. They're never going to be friendly to you no matter what you do, okay? Well, here we go. He produces a budget, which he said he was accused of producing a budget based off of GOP talking points that focused on workforce development, which Republicans have talked about for years at the UW, and they rejected the increases that Evers proposed. And he was, I'd never seen him that animated about anything. You know, he's usually a pretty even-keeled guy.
He's a Vietnam War vet. He's usually pretty even-keeled.
Because he had tried so hard to cultivate that relationship to make it pay off, and it didn't pay off because now they're giving him less money than Evers wanted. He wanted to invest money in workforce development. He talked about engineering, for example, and nursing.
Yeah.
He can't expand engineering with what they gave him, he says, and that with nursing, there's a nursing shortage, and they denied $10 million to address a shortage. How is he supposed to address a shortage?
And what about the pay raise issue? Joint Finance says, sure, you can pay your people 2% more, but we're not going to cover the costs, all of it. I mean, isn't it true the UW system is going to have to find 30% of the cost of those 2% pay raises?
There also is a provision in Evers' budget that would allow the UW to convert a incentive-based funding to a supplemental pay plan. Because if you look at the numbers, like UW-Madison, UW-Milwaukee, their average pay for their faculty lagged their peers by double digits, something like that, mm-hmm. percentage-wise. It would have allowed them to convert some of that money to do a pay plan to help catch up on these things. They said no to that as well. So university is one of the kind of bigger losers so far in this process, again, because of the work Cross put in, not bearing fruit when there was an opportunity, because we have money to spend.
Yeah, and right? that's where I want to go next. Do you think this was nothing but an opening bid by the Republicans inviting a compromise to raise the number eventually in the final budget package?
Republicans pointed out that UW still has $1 billion roughly in reserves. Now, that has been a point of contention since it was first uncovered 6-7 years ago, whatever it was. The UW says that money's accounted for. Republicans say, no, it's not. It's there. You can use it. So you got plenty of money. Oh, by the way, tuition revenues are going up, largely because we have more out-of-state students in the system than we had before. They're a bigger chunk of it. Now, there are factors that drive that. We have fewer high school graduates in Wisconsin than we had 10 years ago. So they're filling gaps or filling slots with out-of-state students who pay more than in-state students do. And you can raise their tuition where you can on in-state undergrads. So they're saying, you guys have the money to do this. And oh, by the way, John Nygren, co-chair of the Finance Committee, said because of the Act 10 changes, 8 years ago, you've saved all these dollars by having pension and healthcare costs accounted for by your faculty rather than by taxpayers. So you guys are doing fine.
So you've never seen Mr. Cross more angry?
No. I can't say I've been in many situations where he would be angry, but he went off on a little bit of a rant about what's going on here with the budget. Now, it's still a long ways from being done. Evers is still saying there's time to put more in, but he's saying that about still do Medicaid expansion. You can still do the K-12 funding he wants to do. So he's not winning on these big ticket items so far.
Well, and here's a guy in Ray Cross that, as you said, has gone out of his way to meet personally with legislators. When he got promoted to the UW system president, I interviewed him in his office then as head of the extension. He had up on his walls the birth dates of every legislator. So he has tried to work our capital very, very hard.
And don't forget, the system is still one of the biggest consumers of general purpose revenue in the state when it comes to state government. So that's the other thing for Republicans. They're like, look, you guys have a lot of money coming into you as it is. However, that general purpose revenue has been shrinking as a share of the overall pie.
True.
So yeah, Republicans talk about the UW budget in general is getting bigger all the time, which it is. But that's because of federal grants for research, out-of-state tuition going up and other pots of money, not because of general purpose revenue.
Yep, that's true. Okay, time now to listen to an exchange between Democratic Senator John Erpenbach, who's defended the governor's original budget for the UW, and a response from Republican Senator Dewey Strobel. Please.
The Republican proposal doesn't go nearly far enough, and there's $45 million on the hook that the system has to come to their legislative parents and see if they can get an increase in their allowance. That's what it comes down to. They know what to do and how to do it better than we do. Our job is to get them the money they need, give them the oversight, work with them, but not dangle $45 million over their head and then pull it back if we're not in a good mood that day.
We're not dictating to the university system here, spend this money this way, that way, and this way. We're saying, you know, it's a block grant, it's a supplemental account, call it what you want, but system, come back to us and you tell us how this money should be spent. And I think as reasonable people here, you know, we'll listen to the logic, and I'm very confident that you guys are capable of making a case for your request as to how this money should ultimately be spent.
We've been talking about all the areas where the Republicans and the Governor Evers disagree. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about something where they agree. There's a package now that was approved by Joint Finance that would boost the pay of public defenders and private attorneys who accept private defender cases from $40 an hour to $70 an hour. It's the first increase since 1995.
Actually, 95, they decreased it by 10 bucks an hour. So it's the first change since 95.
Right. And they're also going to add 20 assistant district attorneys. So this is a package that everybody is behind. It's a costly package. But there are lawsuits saying that if my criminal defender gets like 2 minutes to prepare my defense, it's a violation of the Constitution. So we should give thanks for one area that the D's and the R's are agreeing.
Yeah, and this package is unique because you have to go back to the fall. You had a rare moment where the public defenders, the prosecutors, the court system, and DOJ all came together, Department of Justice, and said, here is a $70 million package. Mm-hmm. Lawmakers, we want you guys in governor. We want you guys to put this in the budget and look at the circuit court system as a whole. Because when there are problems with getting a public defender or a private attorney to defend somebody, when there's a delay, that mucks up the court system because it's a domino effect. This package is $38.1 million, or right around there, something like that. It hasn't addressed one piece, which was Department of Justice. They also had a piece of this package, and it was in separate agency requests, but mm-hmm. looking at it as a whole, DOJ had asked for some money for crime lab folks, pay progression, that kind of stuff. So this is a big piece of what they wanted to do. They added money in, for example. So Evers had a similar package, but Evers did not put money into the circuit court system to help pay for court-appointed attorneys. So here's how it works. If you are somebody who qualifies for public defender, first you can try and get a public defender. If they can't have a workload, they try and hire a private attorney to take the case. That rate under the budget.
Right down from a list. Can you take it? Can you take it? Can you take it?
So the rate would go right now. It's $40 an hour.
Yeah.
It would go to $70 an hour under this provision in the budget. If they can't find a private attorney to take it, then the court appoints somebody. Well, that's $100 an hour. And the county, and that was a Supreme Court order that's going to take effect. The Supreme Court ordered that change, didn't provide funding for it.
Oh.
So the counties are on the hook for that money, right? This provision that was approved by finance adds funding to help offset the cost of the counties. So it's been a joint effort to get this going. Now, it's not everything they asked for.
Right.
You never get everything. But it is an increase for these things. And we're still waiting for the DOJ piece and how that works out.
And it's a compromise that I think is going to stand. And it was, let's look at the reaction of our Chief Justice. Today's action by the Joint Finance Committee, if adopted by the legislature and the governor, will strengthen and support Wisconsin's justice system. So we do have an agreement on one thing.
And one thing they left out, Republicans, is that Evers wanted to begin to index that private attorney rate for inflation going forward, so you don't have a 20-whatever-year gap between increases.
Right. Okay. Now, you mentioned the crime lab. So you had a chance to go through the report. I'm going to be honest, I haven't yet read it. But it says this was the report on crime lab testing. And the bottom line, correct me if I'm wrong, while they emphasize clearing up a backlog on rape kits, that delayed them processing about 350 pending DNA cases, pushing the caseload over 1,100. Am I summarizing it correctly?
Yeah. Just think of it. Think of all the people you have in crime labs as a pie, right? You only have so many hours to do stuff. Well, if you put all of your pie into one area, you're going to leave some pieces out. They can't find more hours to do stuff. So this became, the rape kit became a huge issue for former AG Brad Schimmel in his re-election bid, which was ultimately successful. Josh called the Democrat to beat him, focused on it quite a bit. Remember, there's an ad that he ran, yes, talking about rape kits as part of the closing argument that he made.
Yeah, he said, this is a rape kit. This catches criminals. This
challenge coin.
Medallion challenge coin doesn't, excuse me.
So you emphasize that, you're going to mess some things over here. This shows that the emphasis that was placed upon the rape kits ended up neglecting other things. So how do you address that? More crime lab technicians. But there's this constant kind of debate, this yin and yang of the crime lab, where if you have too many people in there, right, they end up sitting around with nothing to do. You got to find that sweet spot of the what's going on. The backlog has now been resolved for the most part. I think there's always be some lag between what's tested and what's not. But they're trying to find that sweet spot of enough coming in and going out that your people are busy all the time.
Yeah, and a very interesting stat was reviewing each sexual assault kit takes an average of 14 hours. That's a big number. And testing of these rape kits has led to charges against 8 suspects.
It's only half a dozen or so, yes.
Right. And with the rape backlog kit cleared, our crime lab analysts can now focus on reducing this 1,100 backlog. Mm-hmm. And I plan to ask Attorney General Josh Kahl about that in an interview tomorrow at the Democratic Convention, which we'll be talking about in a few minutes. Okay, yesterday, drunken driving, always an issue in Wisconsin. But yesterday, Republican Representative Ott got through the Assembly Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice two, I think, significant changes I want to talk about. First, anyone charged with a first offense, OWI, would have to appear in court, because right now it's a citation, and minimum 5-year mandatory prison terms for homicide by OWI. Now, there's a lot of back and forth. They did not approve a bill that would make, right now, first offense OWI is a civil violation. This bill would make it a misdemeanor, but I want to be clear, that was not recommended by this committee. Can you see the Assembly taking these?
Maybe. I always hesitate to predict what's going to happen with drunk driving bills, because we've seen so many kind of get through the committee process and even get through one house but not the other.
Right.
So I just don't know where the two houses are at on this legislation right now, because I've been kind of focused on the budget.
Right.
So we'll see.
Understand.
Maybe.
But the wake-up call of having to appear before a judge to adjudicate a first offense OWI, I think, is a potentially big deal.
The stuff to watch, the second bill about the mandatory sentences, it always comes down to cost.
Yeah.
So we have a prison population problem in Wisconsin. The more mandatory minimum sentences you add to the equation, the more people are going to have in prison. That adds to that prison population problem, and we're going to build a new one. Governor Evers wants to reduce our prison population significantly by various means, so what do we do with that? That's going to be part of the equation in this final discussion about
right.
those bills.
Okay, new subject. The day after the April election, Justice Kelly told you it was his intent mm-hmm. to seek re-election. So let's listen to Justice Dan Kelly when he formally announced in the Supreme Court chamber that he will be seeking a 10-year term in the April 2020 election. Please.
3 years ago, when I was appointed as a justice of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, I started a conversation with the people of Wisconsin about the kind of people they want serving them on their court. I heard the same two consistent themes everywhere I was. They want their justices to be faithful to the Constitution. The Constitution as it is, not as they might wish it to be. We simply apply the law as we have received it from their legislators. We don't second guess whether it's prudent or effective. We simply apply it. The second theme that I heard was they want us to remember that we are their servants, and they are our bosses.
Justice Kelly was an attorney in private practice. He was head of the Federalist, the Milwaukee chapter mm-hmm. of the Federalist Society. He was off the political radar when Governor Walker named him in July of 2016. I found it interesting. Yes, he made the announcement with his wife, but in the backdrop here, you have Justice-elect Brian Hagedorn, Justice Rebecca Grassl Bradley, former Assembly Speaker and former Supreme Court Justice David Prosser, putting an R sheen on this announcement, right? No doubt?
Well, Prosser's a person he replaced. Bradley, he served as what kind of an advisor campaign in 2016.
Yeah.
And Hagedorn is somebody who worked for Governor Scott Walker, who appointed Kelly, obviously. And he's the freshest example of a conservative victory for the Supreme Court. And Justice Kelly faces possibly a very difficult environment next year, which Hagedorn did as well this spring initially, right? But he pulled the upset. So they're hoping, conservatives are, that Kelly can repeat the playbook of Hagedorn and shock the political world next April.
Will the conservatives and the Republicans Party unify behind Justice Kelly, Jr.? Because you heard the rumors that he might be asked to not seek another term, and others, other big prominent names that we won't go into.
There's always like this, you know, in a situation like this, you're going to hear lots of rumors because people like throwing ideas out there. So I don't know how real those rumors have been. But the concern has been that Kelly was picked by Scott Walker because conservatives wanted their Justice Scalia of Wisconsin. And that's the phrase that I heard when he was picked. They wanted somebody who was a thinker, a deep thinker, who would lead the court ideologically. Kelly does not have a political background. He's never run for judicial court before.
Right.
We don't know what kind of candidate he's going to be. There are already some things from his application, some writings that he's had.
Let's talk about that. He wrote about affirmative action and slavery. Mm-hmm. And when he was asked about that at this press conference, he went back to Justice Clarence Thomas. And then he said, I can't talk about potential issues that may come before the court. How valid is that answer in the run-up to the April 2020 election?
Well, depending on who you've followed for Supreme Court, they've towed that line differently. You know, I mean, just look at this past spring. Lisa Neubauer tried her best not to answer questions about cases or her philosophy. Brian Hagedorn was a little more willing to talk about things, sending signals about how he would, that he's a conservative, you know. So for Kelly, these outside groups, they're going to weigh things like, is he electable, his past writings, what's the dynamic next spring? And that might be the biggest issue to watch of all these things. Because here's what's going on. You have the prospect of a Democratic presidential primary on April of next year and not a Republican one. Go back to 2016, Justice Rebecca Bradley, then also had been appointed by Walker to the court, retained her seat. There was 1.1 million votes in the GOP primary for president that year. There were 1 million votes Democratic primary. Rebecca Bradley won by about 97,000 votes because the drop-off topic, I mean, it's not like a simple one-to-one equation, but that was a huge influence in her winning after she had been accused, or people had brought up her past writings from college that were considered anti-gay. Now, she apologized for those writings. They didn't represent her way she believes now. But she went through the ringer with that. Hagedorn, he was accused of being anti-gay from stuff that he has done recently. He didn't apologize for it. So he's being attacked for his religion.
Blog posts in law school, Hagedorn.
And there was this uprising of conservative energy that helped him win election. Now, that uprising of energy produced 606,000 votes. If we have a contested primary for president next April among Democrats, there's likely going to be 1 million people vote in that primary. Okay? How do you get from 606,000 to 1 million to match the enthusiasm that Democrats are likely going to have? Here's the catch. We can't predict that primary right now. If you go look, let's say a Joe Biden, a Bernie Sanders, Senator Harris, pick your Democrat right now, okay? Elizabeth Warren. That Democrat wins Iowa, wins New Hampshire, comes top two in Nevada and South Carolina, and all of a sudden Super Tuesday cleans up. That could make the race all but over.
Right.
And then we don't matter in April.
That's true.
However, if you go look at the calendar for the Democrats, after like mid-March, there's not really anything until us, other than the caucuses, I think, in Hawaii and Alaska. We have the potential to be a centerpiece.
To be relevant.
For a couple, 3 weeks. Now, all these campaigns, they have the money to be on TV constantly in Wisconsin. You know, what can they do financially? I mean, that's another thing. You know, we don't know what's going to happen. For these groups, these conservative groups, they have to weigh, you know, is it a good investment? Is he the person I want to get behind? And there's going to be a different equation for depending which group you are, because purely political groups, you know, philosophically, it's all about politics to them.
Yep.
That's one thing. Business groups, we found out this spring with Hagedorn, there's a different equation. Hagedorn, with the stuff about his blog post from college, it made the realtors pulled out, right, asked for their money back. WMC, Wisconsin Manufacturing Commerce, didn't get involved through the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, you know. For these business groups, they have clients, they have members, and they have clients.
Yeah.
if the members feel uncomfortable what's going on, they're going to raise issues and the group won't get involved. Because their clients look at what the group does and say, hey, you know, realtors, for example, yep. you sell houses in red yards and blue yards and gay yards and straight yards. I mean, everybody. So if there's like this kind of backlash, it makes your members uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So that's what, so it's a different equation for them than it is for like
okay,
other
you've just said that there's a lot of moving parts
yes.
in Justice Kelly's bid for re-election. Okay, turning to another second, we got about 3 minutes. You and I tomorrow will be at the Democratic Convention mm-hmm. in Milwaukee. It's the first time Governor Evers at the party as the party's leader will be speaking Saturday night. They're also going to be hearing from Attorney General Call, Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, Congresswoman Gwen Moore, Senate Democratic Leader Schilling, and Assembly Democratic Leader Gordon Hintz. Ron Kine and Pocan are not going to be there. But now let's piggyback. Let's go back to the Supreme Court. The two announced candidates are not official yet because you can't file. Ed Filone of Marquette Law School and Dane County Judge Jill Karofsky mm-hmm. will be speaking to the Democrats. Does that what does that signal?
In 2017, Rebecca Dowlett and Tim Burns, then Kansas Supreme Court, spoke ahead of the 2018 election that Dowlett eventually won. Just this spring, Brian Hagedorn, as a justice-elect, spoke to the Republican convention, thanked GOP activists for saving the court with a conservative majority. I mean, like, look, let's be honest. These are partisan races.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Yep.
Now, I asked the party, Democratic Party, because the party was critical of Hagedorn as a sitting, as a justice-elect.
Because he's now in the Court of Appeals and justice-elect for the Supremes.
Said, well, how come it's okay for these guys but not okay for that? And they said, we continue to believe that's inappropriate for a sitting, you know, justice-elect to speak to a partisan audience. So it's a nuance,
okay.
right?
And it's also going to be a fire-up party for the Democratic National mm-hmm. Convention that Milwaukee's going to host in July of 2020. Now, you and I have seen the emails. They want to have 10,000 committed online supporters to draw on as a volunteer base and other activists to get ready for the convention. So it's going to be a fire-up party. Let's get ready for Milwaukee hosting the DNC. They're also going to elect a new chairman, and those in between Ben Wickler and Representative David Bowen, and that'll be announced on Sunday. So, what are going to be your takeaways?
Well, the big thing, like, there'll be lots of speeches, and people will like react to those and their energy, that kind of thing. The GOP convention is all about how they dusted themselves off, and they were back in the ring, ready to go after Hagedorn win. It was a rallying cry, and they'd recognize their problems; they were going to fix them. For Democrats, they're building off of 2018. They had a big win in 2018. The spring election is going to go so well for them at the Supreme Court level. They need to get back up and ready for 2020, for next year's Supreme Court race,
right.
for 2020. And the question is, who is going to lead that party going forward? With David Bowen, he's current vice chair, with outgoing chair Martha Lanning in the top spot. He is somebody who, sitting lawmaker, right? It's a party that's growing more diverse all the time. He's African man from Milwaukee, which is one of the big power centers for Wisconsin politics. Ben Wickler, you have somebody who's got a national a reputation working for MoveOn.org.
As a national organizer.
So he's not experienced fundraising.
Yes.
Moved back to Wisconsin. He's
yep.
Wisconsin native, moved back.
Yep.
So he missed the fights of, you know, 2011 and the 2012 recalls. He wasn't really here. Now, he came back and did stuff at times, but he hasn't been here the way Bowen has. But the question is, whose vision wins out? Who's going to be best to, because chair is about two things. Party chairs are about message and money.
Yep.
That's the bottom line.
Yep.
As a party chair, you can say things that are truly outrageous. That way it makes your candidate look reasonable, right? No matter what he or she says. You got to raise money. You got to raise it. Big dollar, small dollar, as much as you can to build the infrastructure, to knock on the doors, to make the phone calls, to hand out the yard signs, be ready for 2020 because yeah. we are a swing state.
I'm going to look from Governor the thing I'm going to look for is Governor Evers' speech. I think he'll go back to expand Medicaid and fund my transportation plan and K-12 and the university system. I don't know. I'd be interested in how many times he uses the term President Donald Trump in his speech. Okay, which gets us to next week. Now, am I right? Joint Finance is going to try to get to the transportation budget, highway funding next week?
We are waiting for the, as we sit here just before noon on a Friday, waiting for the hearing notice for Tuesday. Expect Tuesday, Thursday. I don't know what they're going to get to for sure. But yeah, there are rumblings about Medicaid and transportation. They got it. Those are two big pieces left. They got to do them soon. So it's either next week or the week after, if they want it done by their self-imposed deadline of June 14th-ish, get that budget out of committee, allows it to be drafted the week after Father's Day, yep, put on the floor the final week of June, and pass the budget.
Lots of news to talk about next week. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for May 31.